Student protests against the ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Program, resulted in the canceling of those programs in over 40 colleges and universities. In 1966, 191,749 college students enrolled in ROTC. By 1973, the number was 72,459. The ROTC was depended on to supply half the officers in Vietnam. In September 1973, for the sixth straight month, the ROTC could not fulfill its quota. One Army official said, "I just hope we don't get into another war, because if we do, I doubt we could fight it." The publicity given to the student protests created the impression that the opposition to the war came mostly from middle-class intellectuals. When some construction workers in New York attacked student demonstrators, the news was played up in the national media. However, a number of elections in American cities, including those where mostly blue-collar workers lived, showed that anti-war sentiment was strong in the working classes. For instance, in Dearborn, Michigan, an automobile manufacturing town, a poll as early as 1967 showed 41% of the population favored withdrawal from the Vietnam War. In 1970, in two counties in California where petitioners placed the issue on the ballot, San Francisco County and Marin County, referenda asking withdrawal of the U.S. forces from Vietnam received a majority vote. In late 1970, when a Gallup poll presented the statement, "The United States should withdraw all troops from Vietnam by the end of next year," 65% of those questioned said yes. In Madison, Wisconsin, in the spring of 1971, a resolution calling for an immediate withdrawal of U.S. forces from Southeast Asia won by 31,000 to 16,000. In 1968, such a resolution had lost. But the most surprising data were in a survey made by the University of Michigan. This showed that throughout the Vietnam War, Americans with only a grade school education were much stronger for withdrawal from the war than Americans with a college education. In June 1966, of people with a college education, 27% were for immediate withdrawal from Vietnam. Of people with only a grade school education, 41% were for immediate withdrawal. By September 1970, both groups were more anti-war. 47% of the college-educated were for withdrawal, and 61% of grade school graduates. There is more evidence of the same kind. In an article in the American Sociological Review, June 1968, Richard F. Hamilton found in his survey of public opinion, "Preferences for tough policy alternatives are most frequent among the following groups: the highly educated, high-status occupations, those with high incomes, younger persons, and those paying much attention to newspapers and magazines." And a political scientist, Harlan Hahn, doing a study of various city referenda on Vietnam, found support for withdrawal from Vietnam highest in groups of lower socioeconomic status. He also found that the regular polls, based on samplings, underestimated the opposition to the war among lower-class people. All this was part of a general change in the entire population of the country. In August of 1965, 61% of the population thought the American involvement in Vietnam was not wrong. By May 1971, it was exactly reversed. 61% thought our involvement was wrong. Bruce Andrews, a Harvard student of public opinion, found that the people most opposed to the war were people over 50, blacks, and women. He also noted that a study in the spring of 1964, when Vietnam was a minor issue in the newspapers, showed that 53% of college-educated people were willing to send troops to Vietnam, but only 33% of grade school-educated people were so willing. It seems that the media, themselves controlled by higher education, higher income people who were more aggressive in foreign policy, tended to give the erroneous impression that working-class people were super patriots for the war. Louis Lipsitz, in a mid-1968 survey of poor blacks and whites in the South, paraphrased an attitude he found typical. "The only way to help the poor man is to get out of that war in Vietnam. These taxes, high taxes, it's going over yonder to kill people with, and I don't see no cause in it." The capacity for independent judgment among ordinary Americans is probably best shown by the swift development of anti-war feeling among American GIs, volunteers and draftees who came mostly from lower-income groups. There had been, earlier in American history, instances of soldiers' disaffection from the war, isolated mutinies in the Revolutionary War, refusal of reenlistment in the midst of hostilities in the Mexican War, desertion and conscientious objection in World War I and World War II. But Vietnam produced opposition by soldiers and veterans on a scale and with a fervor never seen before. It began with isolated protests. As early as June 1965, Richard Steinke, a West Point graduate in Vietnam, refused to board an aircraft taking him to a remote Vietnamese village. "The Vietnamese War," he said, "is not worth a single American life." Steinke was court-martialed and dismissed from the service. The following year, three Army privates, one black, one Puerto Rican, one Lithuanian-Italian, all poor, refused to embark for Vietnam, denouncing the war as immoral, illegal, and unjust. They were court-martialed and imprisoned. In early 1967, Captain Howard Levy, an Army doctor at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, refused to teach Green Berets, a special forces elite in the military. He said they were murderers of women and children and killers of peasants. He was court-martialed on the grounds that he was trying to promote disaffection among enlisted men by his statements. The colonel who presided at the trial said, "The truth of the statements is not an issue in this case." Levy was convicted and sentenced to prison. The individual acts multiplied. A black private in Oakland refused to board a troop plane to Vietnam, although he faced 11 years of hard labor. A Navy nurse, Lieutenant Susan Schnall, was court-martialed for marching in a peace demonstration while in uniform and for dropping anti-war leaflets from a plane on Navy installations. In Norfolk, Virginia, a sailor refused to train fighter pilots because he said the war was immoral. An Army lieutenant was arrested in Washington, D.C. in early 1968 for picketing the White House with a sign that said, "120,000 American casualties. Why?" Two black Marines, George Daniels and William Harvey, were given long prison sentences, Daniels 6 years, Harvey 10 years, both later reduced, for talking to other black Marines against the war. As the war went on, desertions from the armed forces mounted. Thousands went to Western Europe, France, Sweden, Holland. Most deserters crossed into Canada. Some estimates were 50,000, others 100,000. Some stayed in the United States. A few openly defied the military authorities by taking sanctuary in churches, where, surrounded by anti-war friends and sympathizers, they waited for capture and court-martial. At Boston University, 1,000 students kept vigil for 5 days and nights in the chapel, supporting an 18-year-old deserter, Ray Kroll. Kroll's story was a common one. He had been inveigled into joining the Army. He came from a poor family, was brought into court, charged with drunkenness, and given the choice of prison or enlistment. He enlisted. And then he began to think about the nature of the war. On a Sunday morning, federal agents showed up at the Boston University Chapel, stomped their way through aisles clogged with students, smashed down doors, and took Kroll away. From the stockade, he wrote back to friends, "I ain't gonna kill, it's against my will." A friend he had made at the chapel brought him books, and he noted a saying he had found in one of them. "What we have done will not be lost to all eternity. Everything ripens at its time and becomes fruit at its hour." The GI anti-war movement became more organized. Near Fort Jackson, South Carolina, the first GI coffee house was set up, a place where soldiers could get coffee and donuts, find anti-war literature, and talk freely with others. It was called the UFO and lasted for several years before it was declared a public nuisance and closed by court action. But other GI coffee houses sprang up in half a dozen other places across the country. An anti-war bookstore was opened near Fort Devens, Massachusetts, and another one at the Newport, Rhode Island Naval Base. Underground newspapers sprang up at military bases across the country. By 1970, more than 50 were circulating. Among them, About Face in Los Angeles, Fed Up in Tacoma, Washington, Short Times at Fort Jackson, Vietnam GI in Chicago, Graffiti in Heidelberg, Germany. Bragg Briefs in North Carolina, Last Harass at Fort Gordon, Georgia, Helping Hand at Mountain Home Air Base, Idaho. These newspapers printed anti-war articles, gave news about the harassment of GIs, and practical advice on the legal rights of servicemen told how to resist military domination. Mixed with feeling against the war was resentment at the cruelty, the dehumanization of military life. In the army prisons, the stockades, this was especially true. In 1968, at the Presidio Stockade in California, a guard shot to death an emotionally disturbed prisoner for walking away from a work detail. 27 prisoners then sat down and refused to work, singing "We Shall Overcome." They were court-martialed, found guilty of mutiny, and sentenced to terms of up to 14 years, later reduced after much public attention and protest. The dissidents spread to the war front itself. When the Great Moratorium Day demonstrations were taking place in October 1969 in the United States, some GIs in Vietnam wore black armbands to show their support. A news photographer reported that in a platoon on patrol near Da Nang, about half of the men were wearing black armbands. One soldier stationed at Chu Chi wrote to a friend on October 26, 1970, that separate companies had been set up for men refusing to go into the field to fight. "It's no big thing here anymore to refuse to go." The French newspaper, Le Monde, reported that in 4 months, 109 soldiers of the 1st Air Cavalry Division were charged with refusal to fight. A common sight, the correspondent for Le Monde wrote, is the black soldier with his left fist clenched in defiance of a war he has never considered his own. Wallace Terry, a black American reporter for Time magazine, taped conversations with hundreds of black soldiers. He found bitterness against army racism, disgust with the war, generally low morale. More and more cases of fragging were reported in Vietnam, incidents where servicemen rolled fragmentation bombs under the tents of officers who were ordering them into combat or against whom they had other grievances. The Pentagon reported 209 fraggings in Vietnam in 1970 alone. Veterans back from Vietnam formed a group called Vietnam Veterans Against the War. In December 1970, hundreds of them went to Detroit to what was called the Winter Soldier Investigations to testify publicly about atrocities they had participated in or seen in Vietnam, committed by Americans against Vietnamese. In April 1971, more than 1,000 of them went to Washington, D.C., to demonstrate against the war. One by one, they went up to a wire fence around the Capitol, threw over the fence the medals they had won in Vietnam, and made brief statements about the war, sometimes emotionally, sometimes in icy, bitter calm. In the summer of 1970, 28 commissioned officers of the military, including some veterans of Vietnam, saying they represented about 250 other officers, announced formation of the Concerned Officers Movement Against the War. During the fierce bombings of Hanoi and Haiphong around Christmas 1972 came the first defiance of B-52 pilots who refused to fly those missions. On June 3, 1973, the New York Times reported dropouts among West Point cadets. Officials there, the reporter wrote, linked the rate to an affluent, less disciplined, skeptical, and questioning generation and to the anti-military mood that a small radical minority in the Vietnam War had created. But most of the anti-war action came from ordinary GIs, and most of these came from lower-income groups, white, black, Native American, Chinese. A 20-year-old New York City Chinese-American named Sam Choi enlisted at 17 in the Army, was sent to Vietnam, was made a cook, and found himself the target of abuse by fellow GIs, who called him chink and gook, the term for the Vietnamese, and said he looked like the enemy. One day he took a rifle and fired warning shots at his tormentors. "By this time I was near the perimeter of the base and was thinking of joining the Viet Cong. At least they would trust me." Choi was taken by military police, beaten, court-martialed, sentenced to 18 months of hard labor at Fort Leavenworth. "They beat me up every day, like a time clock." He ended his interview with the New York Chinatown newspaper saying, "One thing, I want to tell all the Chinese kids that the army made me sick. They made me so sick that I can't stand it."